Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast, where we speak with leaders from government, nonprofit, and business organizations to gain insights into transformative initiatives that deliver positive outcomes for communities across the country. I am your host, Keith Scott, and welcome to the conversation. Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast. It is my pleasure to introduce someone I've known for 3.5 decades, I guess, maybe more. I'm almost four, right? 4 decades. Yeah. And grew up with him, and business partner, Adrian Atkinson. Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast.
Oh, all right. Glad to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. So for our viewers out there, we had conversations about starting a company, you know, about 2012.
Years ago,
something like that. And so here we are. We have Kale Scott and Associates. We've been able to do some very good things for a lot of different clients. And part of that, when we were discussing that, is, okay, we want to make sure that we're successful in business and have that success parlay itself into doing philanthropic efforts. So for a viewing audience, you are three things: chief people operator, chief people officer, chief operating officer, and you're also leading public sector consulting. And I've just asked you to lead our philanthropic efforts as an organization. So let's kind of unpack that before everybody thinks I'm a horrible boss.
It's all part of the vision. All part of the vision. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, it has been challenging, but great. We did not go into this thinking that it was going to be easy.
Right.
I mean, we really started in one direction, and then we had to pivot. And so after we pivoted, you know, we started making some traction and some progress. COVID hit, and then we had to pivot again. And so, you know, but just staying true to the vision, right? Exactly what you mentioned earlier, really about us building a company that can allow us to do the things that we love to do, but then also to be able to give back. So part of, you know, just our strategic plan really is to be successful enough, right, to begin to do more in our philanthropic endeavors, and then do even better, right? So you get to those stages about how you do this, what are you going to do, and then, okay, how do you take it to that next level? So
Bring people along, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the whole part about, you know, the people officer part, right? How do you bring people along? When we're looking at hiring people, you know, people talk about fit and culture and things of that nature, right? You know, and one of the things that I always say in every interview that we do is that we're looking for people to bring their authentic self to this endeavor, right?
Because, and what does that mean? What does that mean? So a lot of folks hear that, right? What does that really mean? Let's really peel the onion back and say, let's dig into that.
Right. So again, I can give you my perspective.
Okay.
And everybody's going to have a different perspective. Well, let me say it like this. Bringing your authentic self to work, to your environment, and to any engagement is about being who you are, right? Mm-hmm. You have a set of values. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a set of standards that you personally have. And then a lot of us make some adjustments when we go into the business world and into our jobs, whatever. Well, you know, we talk about the mask. We talk about, you know, acting one way and doing all of that stuff, right? Sure. When you get into a work environment. And what we ask you to do is just be professional, right? You can be professional and who you are, still hold your values true to what you're doing. And one of the examples that I would give is that, you know, we have folks that are different from us, right? Nationalities, ethnicities, and we don't want to stifle that, right? Because you've heard people say, well, I don't see color, and I don't know. No, that's your individuality. That's your uniqueness. right? That's your lived experience, and that's what you're bringing to work. So we want all of that coming into our company, but I always take a step back and say, yes, you can be who you are and be authentic, but you need to be professional, and you need to be respectful.
Right.
And if you can do those things, we can work through the other pieces. And if it is that after some time you feel like it doesn't work for you, or we feel like it's not working for us, let us give you a pathway to your next endeavor. Right. And if it's just so, it shouldn't be so diametrically opposed that it's conflict and that it's horrible, because that means either we didn't do a very good job of recruiting and vetting, or we just set up something that was completely horrible, or you didn't actually bring your authentic self, that you were different than who you are.
A lot of different moving parts, right? A lot of influence. You know, and it's funny because when people say that they don't see color, I want them to see color, because actually it's a gift and not a thing we need to run away from. It's something we need to run towards, because, you know, we manage people, right? And you're the chief people officer. So without having that dialogue, you can't get through a lot of these challenges or these assumptions and things like that. I mean, is that what you've seen as well?
Yes, truly. Because again, you hear the word diversity, right? And then the first thing that our social construct has forced us to do is see black and white.
Right.
It is race. It is black. It is, you know, we're all the human race.
Right.
We are humanity, and we're a people. We're individual people. Right. So just like I'm a male, there's females, and there's, you know, people who identify as binary, non-binary. There's a lot of different aspects that come with you. We are all diverse in and of ourselves.
Right.
We bring that diversity of thought
to
the table. We bring our diversity of values to the table. We bring our diversity of how we approach things. So diversity is much more than black or white or race,
right?
And as you bring that to the table, that's what we unpack, right? Yeah. That's how we listen. And again, I know we'll get to this, but, you know, we talk about having an empathetic culture, right? And people are so quick to listen to respond versus then listen to understand. And that comes with having diverse of thought, because you really have to pay attention and be intentional. And I learned that in school, right? Active listening. Actively, we always talk about active.
You were listening when they said active listening.
Active listening. That means I am intentionally listening to you to understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my grandmother said, God gave you two ears and a mouth for a reason. You listen twice as long as you do speak. So those little nuances and things like that is what, you know, again, people bring to the table. And so as we look at really sort of unpacking that, bringing your authentic self, because my lived experience is different from your lived experience, even though we grew up in the same place, right? Your high school experience was different than my high school experience.
Totally different.
Your college experience is different than my college experience. But we're two black men.
That's true. Yeah, they used to call me Cosby Kid, you know. I don't know if that aged well, but, you know, but yeah, they used to call me Cosby Kid. So,
yeah, look, we all had those fun things, you know. You were the Cosby Kid, and I was the educated hooligan.
and here we are.
And here we are, right?
Let's look at you're an owner in your own company, your own boss, and you are respected in a lot of the work that you do in terms of the community. When I asked you, and we talked about this years ago, to go ahead and let's start moving on this philanthropic work, what was your initial feeling? Did you have an immediate drawback to our very first conversation when we were talking about doing good for people?
I did. I mean, because we talked about the Bridge Project and all these different things over the years, as well as even when we started this endeavor. But when you asked me about, you know, what do you think about this and launching it now and being prepared and leading this, I felt like it was a natural extension of what I already do.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's
true. As you mentioned, you know, involved in the community stuff. In many different aspects, from, you know, being an active member in my fraternity, being an active member in my church, just being an active member in the citizenship of where I am, right? Mm-hmm. I live, I work, I play here, I grow here, I develop people here, I'm mm-hmm. engaged. And so I don't see it as an extra thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just who part I am. Who you are. Yeah, just
right.
part
and
of
what I do, right? And I think a lot of people don't realize that. I was talking to a colleague of mine, Baron J. Damon, right? So when we talk about philanthropic stuff, he sure. is a mentor of mine, looking to have, some more experiences with him. But, you know, he has a podcast as well called Giving While Black. And it's interesting because even some of the guests and the people that I've talked to as well, we don't generally see ourselves as a philanthropist. Mm. But we give of our time. We give of our talent. Mm-hmm. We give of our finances. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're helping someone by getting them groceries, whether we're helping with shoes or doing homeless feedings or really just helping your family, right? That if my son needed something or he's away at college and you're available to go do it, that's a philanthropic endeavor, right? Mm-hmm. But when we think about philanthropy, most people think about, I need to give somebody $100 million.
Yes, a check. Write a check. You don't have anything check, to do it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
and it can be as small as you saw a person in need, mm-hmm. whether it was a drink, a soda, clothes, food, and you helped them. That is a philanthropic yeah. endeavor. Yeah. Or, like you said, you volunteered to be a proctor in the school. You volunteered to be a coach, you know, in rec ball or look, mm-hmm. all of those are philanthropic things, and you just have to change the mindset of how you look at it. Mm-hmm. And so when you ask me to do this, I mean, crazy excited because I'm like, we're at that next level. Yes, we're busy and we're doing these things, but if it's part of our DNA as a company mm-hmm. and who we are, then it's not additional work. It's just mm-hmm. an extension of what we're doing and showcasing how we do it from a business standpoint. We talk about, you know, corporate social responsibilities, you hear the taglines or what have you.
Right.
Are you actually living out your values and are you making an impact in your community with positive outcomes for the work that you're doing with them and for them? Because it is about coming alongside people, mm-hmm. coming alongside other organizations, coming alongside other businesses, mm-hmm. and then using your shared values, shared language to make a great impact.
So let's tie the two together, right? So we have a, you're in charge of culture in the company.
Mm-hmm.
We have a empathetic and philanthropic culture that we're trying to grow and breed.
Right.
And then there's people that may be interested in joining our company as a consultant. Mm-hmm. And doing some of the project works that we're doing, like the work that we do with HHS, CDC, and the list goes on and on. How do you tie those two together so that someone who would want to work for KLSA makes that social impact both through their consulting services that they provide a client, but also mm-hmm. through the philanthropic efforts that you're starting to branch out and lead?
So if it's someone who would like to join our company, you know, we're going to go through the typical hiring process that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout that process, we'll get an opportunity to understand where they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, we want to make sure that anyone who we bring on board has the capacity to grow and want to grow, right? Mm-hmm. And not just want to be stagnant, but also make an impact. And then I think when people hear about our culture and even having team members on board,
mm-hmm.
during the interview process, and they see just the interaction and the flow, that settles into their mindset of why they want to join us, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are other folks who would do a lot of research. We've had several, potential candidates as well as those that are on staff now researched us.
Right.
Hey, you know, here's where they are in the industry. Here's what they do. Here's what people are saying about them.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what other colleagues have said when they've interviewed, or they've, you know, again, been interacted with them on different projects. So when you come in, right, you're one, again, bringing your authentic self to it. You understand what we stand for, our values, where we're going. You understand that you want to be part of the growth and the impact that we do and all the projects that we do, and that really resonates with you. Mm-hmm. And then as you settle into the culture and you begin to be who you are, mm-hmm. accomplish the things that we're asking you to do through your project work, through building up others, through collaborating with your team members, you then feel comfortable enough to say, hey, I want to contribute to the American Cancer Society. Hey, mm-hmm. I want to contribute to the National Kidney Foundation. Hey, I'm a member of a board that supports the YMCA or Boys mm-hmm. and Girls Club of America or what mm-hmm. have you. And you're comfortable sharing that information. And then we as a company look at it and say, is it part of our strategy? Do they map to our values mm-hmm. in order for us to make a financial contribution? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily have to be financial. You may say, hey, I'm going to do a street cleanup. Mm-hmm. Well, let's volunteer as a company. Let's go clean up the street, you know, for that Adopt the Street program. Or here in North Carolina, we do stream cleanups or river cleanups, right? Mm-hmm. So we take a crew, we go out. It's a Saturday. There's a lot of other organizations that do that. Mm-hmm. And so you blend all that together, right? And that's how you expand on the philanthropic idea, expand on that belief and theory. Because as you bring people on and we're doing this activity in the community, mm-hmm. not only through the jobs that we work on or projects that we work on, but as a company, what you see us doing in our communities. I mean, we have 26 staff members right now across the U.S., mm-hmm. right? And so if we're doing regional work and we're able to do it together, or we come in for a group environment at our headquarters, then we all make that part of that day or half a day that together we go do a team building activity. And that mm-hmm. involves getting engaged in the community where we are, mm-hmm. right? And I think doing all those things together or in cohort, that you build that philanthropic idea and value. People want to do that. And then we also talk about work-life balance, and it allows you to see how it can be achieved, right?
Right.
There are times where we're gonna be at it, we're gonna be working, and it is what it is. Yeah. But it's also time to stop and reflect too, and just give thanks for what we've been blessed with to be able to do.
Right.
And then instill that in the staff and get staff buy-in, right?
Now, because how do you successfully do that in a remote? I mean, we're primarily. I mean, you're in North Carolina. I'm in Atlanta. We have folks in California, you know, Connecticut. So we have a predominantly remote workforce in mm-hmm. Texas. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's like 10 states or so.
Yeah.
How do you infuse or ensure or assure that the culture that you're trying to establish, or we're trying to establish, happens in a remote world where we're not, you know, we're just on Zoom calls versus handshaking and so forth? Explain that a little bit.
It's really about being intentional, being intentional about what we're doing. It is, you know, again, constantly thinking of ways to connect. We do, you know, our VP of operations does one-on-ones with everybody in the company.
Right.
Right. And those are scheduled one-on-ones. And it's not just about your project. It's how are you the person doing?
Like the Wellness Wednesday that
exactly. We have Wellness Wednesdays. We send out information. You know, our lunch and learns are fun, you know, and getting together and understanding. And sometimes it is not just about a project or a particular training, that it is, you know, we're doing fun stuff. And it's really building that camaraderie amongst everyone in a remote environment. But then also narrowing it down to the teams doing the same thing, the managers doing the same thing.
Smaller,
it's all of that. So it starts at the top of the larger picture. Then as you whittle yourself down to the team, it is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ever evolving because we are remote and things are happening, right? But we try to make sure that people are healthy mentally, mm-hmm. physically, as well as it's going to be stressful. But having an open dialogue about what's going on and having the support in place to build them up so that when they do have a rough day or a rough client, right, the environment to where they're experiencing that is a comfortable, safe environment to be able to talk it through mm-hmm. and then go back out and make it happen. And so
building teams.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. So that, I mean, this is great, right? I mean, we're starting to see folks, you know, land here, feel comfortable being able to be their authentic self. We've grown.
Yes.
And we're projected to potentially grow 2x by next year this time. How have you been able to stay wellness, you know?
You know, it's an intentional focus.
Okay.
And then we're not perfect, right? We're not
true.
Perfect.
Everybody will know that if they ever met me. That's true.
But, you know, again, if you're human, right, you know, there are imperfections there. And you know, we don't have all the right answers.
Right.
But the thing is that we admit our mistakes and we grow from them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then we also allow staff to have that input. If it is not working for you, mm-hmm. why is it not working? As you know, people typically say, don't just talk about the problem. If you come to me with a problem, have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a potential solution, right? Because if you just
some
have
options.
A problem.
Yeah, some options.
You just got a problem, then you just complaining.
Right.
Okay, help me help you.
Right.
Right. And then for me, again, I just try to smile as much as possible, even through the stress.
Yeah.
Right. Of what's happening with, you know, again, implementing new programs, implementing new software and bringing on people in the hiring process, but also learning from that. Right. How can I do better? How can I be efficient and effective in how I'm doing it? But also, how can I delegate? I don't have to be the one doing everything.
It is a team effort, right? I mean,
it's a total team effort. Because if you're going to micromanage it, I mean, then why are you hiring people?
Right.
Right.
Right. The one thing I remember you coming to me and I was like, okay, explain how you're going to make this work. And you know where I'm going. Discretionary PTO. What does that mean? Because when you first told me, I was like, you mean they can just leave whenever they, you know, what is discretionary PTO? Anybody who's trying to join our firm, this is a good selling point.
Right, right.
I'll have to explain it to you. So go ahead.
So the industry terminology that people hear most is unlimited PTO or unlimited personal time off,
mm-hmm.
right? So now there are some legal restrictions and things that you have to apply to your time off policy or leave policy, right? California, for example, you have to have 5 hours of sick leave. I think it's the latest legislation.
There's a floor.
Thing, right.
There's a floor. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to have that. So however you designate that is to meet that compliance. And, you know, we have folks who make sure that we're in compliance with all states with regards to leave policies. But the PTO policy or discretionary PTO is that we're not doing it on an accrual basis, which is typical, right?
Right.
So with the benefits that we offer, PTO is one of them. Mm-hmm. And you actually can take the time off when you come to work. So there's no wait period. It is personal time off that you can use with discussion from your manager at any time, right? So I express and make sure folks know when you're coming on, it is not professional for you to be working 2 days and then take a month off.
Right.
That's just not professional, right? And if my manager is allowing you to take a month off, and you just got here 2 days ago.
Let's have a conversation with the manager.
Right. It's a conversation there because, you know, the way that we look at it, you know, again, most folks will only take about 15 to 16 days off a year, no matter how much time off you give them, because it's about work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, for lack of a better way to say, trying to force you to take the time off, manage your time accordingly.
Yeah.
But also take care of yourself. Self-care is important. So with discretionary PTO, it's really saying, I don't want the administrative headache and burden of you work 60 hours this week. Okay, you want to take 4 hours here. We got to document the over all the documentation that typically comes with a PTO. Or if there's something that, you know, again, comes up and you just don't have the accrued time to take off for whatever reason that is, that's a discussion that you have with your manager. We talk about it. And if it's going to be for an extended period of time, now you have upper level or executive engagement to say, how is this going to impact our projects where they're assigned? Mm-hmm. How is this going to impact the company itself if this person is gone? And then what are our legal responsibilities to the person? And then how do we make it the best for everyone involved? And those are individual bases.
Right.
And again, it takes away the administrative burden for the company to be tracking every single thing, because things change and things come up, and you don't want people working to feel like, I can't take this time off because I've only accrued 4 hours, but I really need to take a mental health day.
Right. And they're going to bring that into their client support, client engagements, and it's going to impact their work quality. And eventually, you know, it's just not going to be, it's not going to bode well, right?
Yeah, but we do monitor, right? We do monitor, because with any policy, you know, there's an opportunity for abuse.
Sure.
And that's why it's just consistent conversation, understanding with the managers, because if you're going to be taking an extended period of time off, how is that impacting your team? Because you don't want Keith always, you know, every Friday Keith's taking a day. Every Friday he's taking a day. He's not doing da-da-da. You know, that also erodes the culture that you're building as well. So, and because it's putting an unnecessary burden on others, and now you got this tit-for-tat thing of, okay, you take off, I'm going to take this off, da-da-da-da. Right. And then pretty soon, work's not getting done. Morale is in the garbage.
Right.
Clients are not happy, and then we're losing revenue because now we've impacted everything. And we certainly don't want to point to a PTO policy around that. And then you have to sort of walk those things back. But, you know, just through the course of not only our research, but just looking at our company in general, it's a great part of our competitive package that we give as far as our benefits. But it also allows that flexibility in a remote world, consultancy that we do to give that flexibility to allow for a better work-life balance.
And that fits perfectly for a consulting firm, right? Because consulting is feast or famine. You've got large project engagements, which sometimes it's going to require you to work more than 40 hours. And then you can probably just take some time off after the project concludes, or there's some slow periods in the consulting project. You're right, because the administrative part of that, the management of that, is not fun, but it also does bring in a lot of undue stress, and that, you know, it's like pores that sweat from your skin is going to come out in some way, fashion.
But it also tells us too, right, that, you know, when you establish a culture of open communication and understanding, again, that empathy part, right, understanding what's going on, you can kind of sense some things if you're in tune to your team, and then you'll begin to work to balance that out so they don't particularly have to make that decision at the breaking point, right? Because you certainly don't want someone getting to that point, but you also don't want, just because, you know, hey, I want to go to the beach for a week, that I'm just taking time off and what have you. But that communication between manager and direct reports is critical. To understanding that. But again, the PTO, the discretionary PTO is exactly that. It's discretionary. It doesn't mean that you're going to get it because you ask.
Right.
It could be, you know, whittled down. If you ask for 5 days, maybe it's 3 days. Again, that conversation about it, right? If you need 15 days, okay, when do you need it? How does that look? Let's look at your projects. Let's look at the availability of others. And what can we do? If it's just really, really necessary for you to take that, how do we lead into that time that you're going to be off so that we are shored up on your team end, the project end, and it's not a super negative impact? You know, their absence is going to be felt, right, as part of being gone from the team. But let's minimize that feeling, that impact.
And project it too, right, so that we could prepare for it. You know, it's interesting because we've had we've had consultants work, they're working, they're billing, they're not on PTO, but they said, you know what, I'm going to take a trip to South America and just work from there for a week. And we saw no drop off. They were working on Eastern Standard Time, wherever they were, but we saw no drop off really. I found that to be, fascinating and another kind of.
But it starts with communication, right? If I know you're going to be in South America, right?
Right.
And I know that there's going to be time differences and understanding like that, but you're still going to be able to work.
Right.
Okay. How do we mitigate that if your internet is not working?
Right.
How do you set things up in advance that if you do have some sort of downtime or what have you, or God forbid that there's some political uprising where you went or a natural disaster or something that causes some things there. Hopefully you wouldn't be traveling during those seasons and times, but you just never know. And so, you just try to plan accordingly, knowing that that person may or may not be available. What will be the impact? Who will be the backup? And don't assign critical tasks to this person while they're in that extended trip phase or what have you. And that way you don't lose momentum for the project as well as for the team.
So if I were to come and ask you a question about why would anyone want to work for our company at Kale Sky & Associates, what would you say?
Okay, I could give you a biased opinion, but the corporate, no.
Let's start with the biased opinion.
The biased opinion is we're the greatest company out here working and doing great work for the business that we're in, right? Mm-hmm. You could go to the larger firms, and I won't say names.
No free advertising. Leave them alone.
just leave them alone. I mean, again, I would say because we're, simply put, we're about relationships. We're about building those relationships. So our interactions with folks are relational and not transactional.
Right. Exactly.
That's a simple way to put it. Because we build relationships, we're able to grow our clientele. We're able to get referrals and calls out the blue about doing work, and we're able to do things that some firms really won't do because they're looking at the bottom line to it. But if it has a greater impact to the community, right? We work with them again. One of our clients, right? They didn't have the budget to do what they wanted to do from an assessment perspective, from a DEI perspective for their municipality, right? They reached out to us due to the great work that we did with another municipality. Yeah. And we had a conversation with them about, okay, here's what it would cost to do what you would like to do to get this impact. And they researched that and said, well, we can't really do that at that cost. So we like, okay,
we stripped it down.
Stripped it down. Here's alternatives. And then also here's recommendations that will help you once we're gone to build out. And if you see the progress, the outcomes that you're looking for, then you have an opportunity to either continue on in that fashion or have a budget item to have us come back for advisory services that may not be as in depth, but to give you a fresh perspective of it, do a reassessment, and then show impact and deliverable. And then that helps you with your constituencies, maybe do your dashboard or something. But but that's what you get when you come to KLSA, right?
Yeah.
You get a trusted advisor. You get a co-designer in your system. You get a collaborator. And you get a relationship that we hope will last for a lifetime. We hope, we understand, again, even commercial side as well as governmental side, there's changes of administration, but the work that we do and the impact that we drive within those organizations, it is left past a certain administration.
Right.
Because, again, we're data-driven, we show the impact, and we're impacting communities and people, which is what every government official wants to do, right?
Exactly.
And it helps with economic mobility. It's the business case.
Exactly.
So all those things are the value that we drive as a collaborative partner and a trusted advisor. That's why, someone should come to work with us.
I like your biased outlook there. So so one of the things that kind of coming out, going back to KLSA Gives, you've been able to now foster a relationship with Men Wear Pink, right?
Yes.
So let's go into that. So this is kind of your I know you've been doing a lot of philanthropic work, prior to this relationship or even this effort. now we've got this co-relationship that you're leading. You're the ambassador for that organization. Explain what that organization does, the outcomes, your involvement, and how are things going there?
So it is the American Cancer Society, mm-hmm. and they have a program called Men Wear Pink. And it's one of several programs that they have, and it's about men being ambassadors and bringing awareness to breast cancer, right? And it's raising money for breast cancer research, awareness, materials, and it comes alongside that program that is called Making Strides, American Cancer Society, Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. What if I got that right? So the program itself is, so we've already started raising money mm-hmm. for the American Cancer Society as part of this program. Mm-hmm. It really kicks off 1st of September is where you start seeing, September of this year. So I'm a 2024 ambassador. So the American Cancer Foundation and this program, it is nationwide. So you mm-hmm. have ambassadors in every state mm-hmm. raising money. So tip and again, Atlanta is one of those places where they raise a lot of money mm-hmm. with their ambassadors. North mm-hmm. Carolina is going to be up there.
You're going to make North Carolina work,
right? I'm going to be driving that, right? But again, it's really about raising the awareness for the American Cancer Society against breast cancer. And it's not just breast cancer. And that's one of the things that I've said when I signed on to be mm-hmm. an ambassador for this year, that mm-hmm. while predominantly men wear pink, and I'm sort of wearing pink today, is about raising that awareness. But every dollar, every amount of money that's raised goes to the broader research and development. You know, children's research. We have places called Hope Lodges, mm-hmm. and where it's for folks who are undergoing treatment can come and stay for free. People know about the Ronald McDonald House and St. Jude's and things like that. But the American Cancer Society have things like the Hope Lodge. So mm-hmm. here in Greenville, we have one. It's called the McConnell Robb Hope Lodge. And it's been in existence for 22 years. Just mm-hmm. celebrated the 22-year birthday there. So it was really cool. But not everyone knows about these assets that are in their communities, right? Mm-hmm. And more are being built. But the bigger picture is it's about getting rid of cancer. How mm-hmm. can we eradicate this disease? This thing that, you know, when people hear about it, big C, right? You know.
I'm a 4-year survivor, right?
Exactly. So and so you have other things like, you know, Relay for Life happens, you know, other cancer surviving things and programs that are out there. All this is for the greater good. So this is just one aspect of the greater good. So my campaign slogan that I get out and I talk to people about to bring awareness, I start with the awareness first, because if you don't know about it, you're not educated about it, me asking you for money is irrelevant. You're not going to do that. You know, that's not what you do. So it's about bringing the awareness. And then once that awareness happens, I talk to you about it's not an either or proposition. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not either or. I'm not asking you to either give to the Kidney Foundation or the American Cancer Society. I'm not mm-hmm. asking you to either give to autism or the American mm-hmm. Cancer Society. I'm saying yes and, right? Yeah. It's a yes and proposition. Right. Yes, you could do exactly what you've been doing, mm-hmm. which is give to those organizations, and you can consider the American Cancer Society, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. if your budget is like, okay, I know each year I'm going to give $7,000, $10,000 to nonprofit organizations that are near and dear to me for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. I talked to you about how do you spread that dollar amount across all those organizations, right? And not just be financial with them, but also your volunteerism, your activism, right? Advocating for them and bringing awareness to them, which also helps bring more funds to them.
Right.
Because the more people know about it and find it interesting and it mm-hmm. resonates with them, the more funding is available, right? And I also talk to people about it doesn't have to be a one-time gift. While those are great, you know, a sustainable gift, maybe it's $10 a month. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's $100 a month. Mm-hmm. That goes a long way for any nonprofit, right? I'm speaking particularly about the American Cancer Society and Men Wear Pink, but it goes a long ways with any nonprofit organization that you feel meets your values, align with where you are, and that resonates with you. And that's part of what KLSA Gives is. We're identifying organizations that fit our values and impact the community. Again, I can tell you, me personally, I have several organizations. I sit on the board of two or three nonprofits right now. I think I'm about to roll off one. So, but again, it's about those things that are near and dear to me. You know, you mentioned you're a survivor, right? My aunt's a survivor. She just rang the bell, you know, a few months ago. But I also had a really good friend pass away at the age of 32 from cancer, right? Both my parents are kidney transplants recipient. Not only are both my parents, my mom's twin sister, my dad's brother, you know, that kidney, the National Kidney Foundation, again, near and dear to me, just like the American Cancer Society. Autism, same thing, right? Have a friend who has a son that is autistic. Our friend William, his son was on the spectrum for autism, right? So those things help him bring awareness to it. I do environmental stuff, and you know, I have a list every year of here's who I interact with, here's who I give to. I have a set dollar amount that I've already put aside that's going to go to philanthropic stuff, but that's just one aspect of giving, which is, again, what KLSA Gives is all about. We have staff that are volunteering for organizations that are near and dear to them. And if we're in the area, guess what we do? We partner with that staff person. We go there. We volunteer. If we're going to have a group in the region, we try to schedule something to be part of what they're doing in the region. Again, it's those, as they say it in healthcare.
And monetarily support. And monetarily support.
That's right. And monetarily support that. So whatever we can do that makes sense for us, whether it is monetary, whether it is human power, if it's advocacy, advertising, you know, it's all about the awareness. Once you get the awareness out there, I always say the finances are going to come.
I agree. I agree. Well, look, we can talk about this all day. We work together every day. So everyone, you're kind of getting a glimpse of what a strategy session between the both of us looks like. But, you know, Adrian, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for leading something that's near and dear to me. I know it's near and dear to you as KLSA Gives. Yes. I'm excited about where you're going to take that in the future. And nothing is more fulfilling than seeing us creating a conduit to make an impact on society, because we're blessed. We've had a lot of fortune in our lives, and we want to help others who have not had that, right? And if you're out there looking for a great place to land for and join, build your career that's actually making a social difference, this is the company for you. So, Adrian, how can folks get in contact with you, and how can they learn a little bit more about some of the philanthropic efforts that you've got going on?
Well, before we go there, I just want to thank you for not only having me on and having this conversation, but again, just establishing the vision. You know, when we talked about this, you say, here's my vision of what I'm looking at. And then we came together, right? And it was about us having a very similar vision about what we wanted to do, getting on board with that, and then strategizing as to how it could happen. And we talk about it all the time. You know, there's more than one way to get to the end result. And our company allows that disagreement on the process, but agreement on the outcome, right? Because you're not always going to agree on the process to get there. But if you know what the outcome is going to be, you know, you can take those alternative paths to get there. You can, again, reach me on LinkedIn, Adrian Atkinson, CDE, on LinkedIn. You can also email me, adrian.atkinson@klscottassociates.com. And again, you'll see me out and around, and there'll be more information to come about KLSA Gives to the public, to where they can see, join, and participate in whatever fashion that they choose to do.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thanks for our listeners for joining the Citizen Experience Podcast. Until our next episode, we will see you then.
Thank you for listening to the Citizen Experience Podcast. If you're seeking a strategic advisor to support technology or organizational transformation, you can find us at www.klsaa.com, or you can email us at info@klscottassociates.com. Thank you for joining the conversation.